Hello, welcome to Raymond Castile's Basement of Horror. This is the first episode that I'm shooting after my eye surgery. How does it look? Can you tell any difference? I can. When I look in the mirror, I can tell a little bit of difference, but I don't think you can. Well, it went very well as far as the eye is concerned. The eye went perfectly. Everything else went to hell, but the eye went perfectly. I did have some bad reactions to the experience, which, you know, this isn't a medical show, but everything involving the eye was fine. Other things were not fine. I've got a rare blood mutation, and I have to take medication every day to prevent my body from producing too many platelets. And I stopped that medication for the surgery. Because, you know, when you do a surgery, you stop any medication that might affect your bleeding, because they don't want you to bleed during a surgery. So I temporarily stopped the medication. That was probably a mistake. And I had some bad reactions that I'm still, sometime later, still dealing with it. So that, and we don't need to get into details, it's gross. But basically I've got mutated blood. So I have to kind of like Don Ramon that we're going to talk about in a minute. And I've got to take this medication every day or else I'll mutate and things will go badly. It'll be like The Substance or something worse than that. I don't know. It kind of did feel for a few days like I was in The Substance. things were going very wrong with my body. But my eye was fine. That part was great. The eye was like Bugs Bunny on a tree branch, where his adversary saws the branch and the tree falls down. So the rest of my body was like the tree falling down, but my eye was the branch floating in midair. So that went fine. Everything else, I am going to do the other eye, and I don't know when exactly, in the next few weeks, and this time I'm not stopping my medication. And hopefully things will go better. I hope. Everything involving the eye will be just as good, but everything else would be much better. Now I know kind of the pitfalls and what not to do, and I'll be on guard for that. So that's our medical update for this episode. Thank you for watching. That's Basement of Horror for today. No. We're going to talk about something monster-related. We're going to have something we rarely do here, an unboxing episode. I figure if Werner Herzog can do unboxing episodes, I can do unboxing episodes. There's no shame in it. If Werner can do it, I can do it with no shame. So we're going to have an unboxing episode. We're going to get right to it. You notice it's no preamble, no discussion about what's in here. Let's just get right on with it. Are you having a good October? Has it been a little warm? In my videos that I shot in the summer, I was imagining everyone else was experiencing beautiful fall weather, where I was in the summertime. Well, now it actually is fall, and it still feels like summer. Who would have thought? Okay, what is this? This should be, I hope, the Trick or Treat Studios Don Ramon Beast of Blood figure and the Shockmaster figure, the Mego-style action figures. And just by coincidence, look what I have here. Trick or Treat Studios masks for Shockmaster and Beast of Blood. Okay, let's see here. Isn't it so fun to watch people take this stuff out of boxes? I hope that's what's actually in here. Wouldn't that be something if that's not what's in here? I did end up selling those Don Post masks from the previous episode. And it is sad, I did let them go, but I had to. Not only did I have the expense of that Topstone thing that I said I'd bought, that was expensive, but I also had now medical expenses, and Billy, my good buddy Billy, who was just here a little while ago, he had another one of his episodes. You know, he has like every 6 months or so, he has an episode where something goes wrong with him. He's very fragile, medically fragile. I have to take very good care of him. And I give him also, just like me, he takes medication every day. And he gave me quite a scare. And I took him to the vet, the emergency vet. And he's doing okay now, but he's going to get an MRI in a couple of days. So, just like his human, me, Billy, it seems like we're in sync. When I have a health problem, he has a health problem. When I'm sick, he's sick. It's like we're in sync. But you know, Billy's very sensitive. So now I've got vet bills. I got pet insurance, but I have vet bills to deal with. So I have all these bills. So I could not keep those Don Post masks. I had to sell them. Just something had to go. So they had to go. I'm trying not to look at these too much. Let's get them out of here, and then we will push this box out of the way. So that's been my adventure. My health-related adventures and vet adventures, and that's my October so far. Although I did do some fun things. I went to a haunted house with some friends. We have a historic main street where I live, and I walked around there, and it's a nice atmosphere, particularly this time of year. It feels very Halloween-y. It's kind of what I imagine maybe walking through Sleepy Hollow this time of year would be like. I know I have friends who live in that area where Sleepy Hollow is, and they shoot video of them walking around looking at the quaint surroundings. That's kind of what it's like here. We have a 19th century main street. It's very quaint, with very old buildings. And so I walked around Main Street, and I actually went to the zoo. The mission wasn't to just see the animals. The mission was to do something for the show, which I did accomplish. It didn't quite go exactly as I planned, but it wasn't a failure. I mean, I came away with something I can use. But there was something at the zoo I wanted to see that pertained to an episode I wanted to do in the show. So I got behind-the-scenes access at the zoo, and I went into a private area, and I saw something that I'll talk about on the show. I could take pictures of it. I couldn't share pictures of it. That was disappointing. But at least I can talk about seeing it. And that'll be an upcoming episode later in the season. So I did that just earlier today, actually. And hopefully I'll get a few more fall activities in there before Halloween, I hope. I've been busy preparing this show, editing those episodes I shot in the summer, and now I'm going to be editing this episode. So there's a lot of editing in my future. Okay, now I'm looking at these for the first time. Even though I had eye surgery, I still need magnifying glass, unfortunately. But at least now I can look out of both eyes instead of just one. He's cute. I like him. So there's Beast of Blood. Both these cards are kind of bent. These came from Amok Time Toys. I, instead of buying direct from Trick or Treat, my experience is that it it's been better for me to buy through Amok Time. I seem to get things quicker, and Amok Time is very responsive. They'll tell you what's going on with things when other people won't, and kind of like with like the NECA trick-or-treaters, if there's a window, like no one can get them, but there's like a little window, if you order right now, you can get them. They'll send a message out saying order right now, and they seem like they're in your corner, so I like dealing with them, and they get stuff to me quickly, so I like going through them. And with most things, whenever the manufacturer gets it, they get it pretty quickly. There's not a big wait, unlike, I don't know, like Big Bad Toy Store or Entertainment Earth or some of these other outfits where you have to wait 6 months after everyone else has gotten theirs. That's not the way it is with Amok Time. So I've had good experiences with Amok Time, so I stick with them. Okay. Aha. All right, well, let's get an initial look at these. And we'll look at them a little more in a minute. That is the Shockmaster. Ah. And this is the Beast of Blood. He doesn't get a coffin, unfortunately. Ah. Do they call him Don Ramon anywhere? Nope. Okay. Let's talk about Trick or Treat Studios. I almost said NECA. These are not NECA. This is Trick or Treat Studios. Competitors with NECA. All right. Who's Trick or Treat Studios? Well, they were founded in 2009 by Chris Zeffro and Justin Mabry. Those two men are the founders of Trick or Treat Studios. They opened the company in 2009 with $25,000 and an assortment of 18 masks. Justin is the artist for Trick or Treat. I don't know if he designs everything, but he's the main mask sculptor. One of the first masks that Trick or Treat put out was Justin's version of the Shock Monster. And that mask has become a staple of Trick or Treat all through the years. They still make that version to this day. In their first year, Trick or Treat Studios made $48,000. The company was run out of Zeffro's house. By 2023, they were a $30 million business. About 10 years into the business, they branched out into the toy market. By 2021, their toy sales began to overtake their costume sales. And everything I'm reading here is according to news articles and interviews with these principals that I found online. So these are legitimate news articles. That's where I'm getting the information. At the end of 2022, Trick or Treat Studios purchased Don Post, Topstone, Elusive Concepts, and The Great Cover-Up from Jemmy. Jemmy owned all those IPs, and Trick or Treat Studios purchased all those brands from Jemmy. Jemmy bought out Paper Magic, which had bought out all those different IPs, all those different companies. And I remember Christmas, might have been Christmas Eve or Christmas evening of 2022, Justin called me and his first words were, "I just bought Topstone." I can imagine what that was like for him, because like me, he's a huge Topstone fan, and he bought the company, he bought the IP from Jemmy along with Don Post and all these other classic legendary brands. According to the news articles, and also I think an announcement on Trick or Treat Studios' website, they purchased these in April 2023, but that's when they announced it. That's when they went public. They actually did the deal at the end of 2022, because that's when I got the call from Justin. I think it was like Christmas Eve, the the night of Christmas Eve that he called me and told me that. But it was made public in a press release in April 2023 that they own these brands. As far as the Topstone products are concerned, they haven't gone gangbusters with those yet. They recreated, I think, four masks or a handful of masks and put those out under the brand name Chamber of Horrors. And here's one of them. Here, we'll look at that. But they haven't gone full tilt with making a wide array of Topstone masks, reissues or recreations of the classic masks. They did that initial run of a handful of reproductions of Keith Ward masks, and now they've done this action figure, and so far that's all they've done with Topstone. They've done a lot more with Don Post. They've made several replicas, recreations, redos of classic Don Post masks, and I think I talked about those in the Don Post episode. Some of those are really, really good, and the Topstone ones are really good. They don't look exactly like the originals, but they look like what the originals were supposed to look like, if you can understand that. Like the vision that Keith Ward had for those original masks, I think that's what Justin was going for, trying to bring that to life. But they're very, very close to the original sculpts, but they're re-sculpts. So that's a little preamble about Trick or Treat, so you know who they are. Let's look at these masks. This is the Chamber of Horrors Topstone Shock Monster that Trick or Treat put out a year ago. And yes, he has a hairnet, because I put my masks to work. They don't get to sit around for free. They have to earn their keep. And the Shock Monster works in a diner, so he has to wear that hairnet, because he's, you know, he's frying hash browns and stuff. He can't get his hair into the food, so he has to wear the hairnet. And that's why he's got that. He actually shipped from Trick or Treat Studios with this hairnet, because they knew he'd probably have to have a job in the service industry and he would need the hairnet. And he comes with a plastic, what would you call it? Not a holder or a frame, or it's like a plastic version of the rubber mask inside, very much like Cesar, their vinyl masks. They have those plastic holders inside to maintain the shape of the mask. Now, this is supposed to be based on the Keith Ward sculpt, and it is. It looks a lot like the Keith Ward illustration. Maybe more like the illustration than the Keith Ward sculpture. I did a video talking all about the Shock Monster mask and the history of it. I've done a couple of videos, so search that out. There's a Basement of Horror episode all about the Shock Monster, and there's a Tomb of the Topstones video all about Shock Monster. So you can learn all about Shock Monster. And you can see the original Keith Ward sculpts and Justin's early interpretation of the character before he did this one. This is the one with after they bought the Topstone IP. But you can see that they don't use the Topstone name. They're not branding these as Topstones. I have had this hairnet off once to take a picture of him, but I don't. I want to keep it on because it's part of the original mask. He's got his tag. He's got his holder inside. He's got his hairnet. He's got the whole thing. He's even got his original bag from the factory. So I want to just keep it all together. I don't want to. Not that I'm going to sell him or anything, but I just, you know, I'm a mint box collector, so I like to keep everything in its original condition. And this is the Trick or Treat Studios Beast of Blood mask. Now, they put this out a few years ago. I don't know how old this is, but it's been a while. And it's got the movie logo right there. Well, the movie poster art. That is the Beast of Blood. And the character's name is Don Ramon. He's also called the Chlorophyll Monster. Chlorophyll, like in plants, Chlorophyll Monster. And he's a whole head mask. He has a back. had him a long time. Let's see if there's a year on this. Seems like I've had him forever. Sculpted by Justin Mabry. Designed in the USA, made in Mexico. I don't see a year on him. But it seems like I've had him 5 years. But I don't know if it was post-COVID or pre-COVID when I got him, but he's been around for a while. This mask has been around for a while. As far as I know, he's still in production. So Trick or Treat, this isn't the first go-round for these characters. They've been in the Shock Monster business a long, long time, and they've been in the Beast of Blood business for a few years, too. So it was, I think, a natural that these are the two characters they would choose to launch this new Mego-style line. I guess they could have launched it with much more mainstream characters, but I understand they're trying to go for a more cult market and trying to get away from some of the things NECA does. They're not trying to follow NECA's footsteps. They're trying to blaze their own trail. And they certainly have, because I don't think any mainstream company, including NECA, would make these toys. And they couldn't make a Shock Monster now because Trick or Treat owns the IP. What should we start with? Let's look at Shock here. Now, I think, I could be wrong, I think the head is based more on Justin's original sculpt than the new sculpt, but I could be wrong about that. You can see he's got the Chamber of Horrors branding, and that is a Topstone brand. Topstone did use that. Here's a vintage Topstone company catalog that shows the Chamber of Horrors branding. They did use this for a time in the 1960s. That is a genuine part of Topstone history, the Chamber of Horrors branding. They didn't just make that up. That is part of the Topstone legacy. And this is obviously based on Keith Ward's Shock Monster illustration. I'm wondering if there's any of Jim Warren's redo of that illustration in this. I can't tell. But the original illustration is by Keith Ward. He created this character. 1954 is when the character was copyrighted by Topstone. And it was called Horror. Jim Warren is the one who called it the Shock Monster in his ads, in Famous Monsters, and his various publications. He thought Horror was too generic, so he called it Shock Monster. It's got some cool haunted house type illustrations. A lot of blood, very gory. Let's look at his outfit. He almost looks like a martial artist, like a ninja or something. There are a lot of ways they could have gone with this, and it's interesting the style they used. I like he's very gothic. They could have made him more action-packed, like he's ready for adventure and he's brawny and husky. They didn't do that. And on the back they have the prototype, which does have a kind of a brawny look. I'm glad that it evolved from that prototype to what we got. You see, that looks more action figure-y looks more like an action toy. Doesn't have that sort of emaciated look that the finished toy does. I mean, that looks much more dead, like a zombie. That looks like it might beat you up. I like the graphics. I like that they kept it simple. They stuck with topstone imagery, whether genuine topstone imagery or illustrations that were certainly in the spirit of 1960s topstone. They didn't go for a revisionist aesthetic. They kept things very traditional. Does it say who sculpted this? Manufactured by Trick or Treat Studios. Based in Santa Cruz, I should have mentioned. The company is based in Santa Cruz, California. Designed in the USA, made in China. Shock Monster and Chamber of Horrors are copyrights of Trick or Treat Studios. Developed by Justin Mabry, Alexander Ray, and Sam First. Sculpted by Justin Mabry and Alexander Ray. Packaging designed by Sam First. So, Justin and Alexander Ray sculpted this figure. I do think, now that I'm looking at him more closely, yeah, I do think he's based more on Justin's earlier Shock Monster sculpt before they got the Topstone IP. That's what it looks like to me, that it's based more on the earlier Mabry Shock Monster from Trick or Treat's early days. And Justin sold that shock mask on his own before it was an official Trick or Treat mask, before Trick or Treat Studios added it to their lineup. It was one of Justin's independent masks, so as an independent artist, he would sell it. Let's look at some other figural interpretations of Shock Monster and see how this one compares. This is a custom Shock, and this was designed by Nick Williams. Doesn't have his name on it anywhere, but I know that's who designed it. He's the brother of Andrew Williams, who's a good friend of mine. And this was made for the Universal Monster Army. It was promoted to the members of that group. You can see the difference in interpretations of this character. And that's the Universal Monster Army t-shirt. Universal Monster Army, it's still around. It's basically an online club. It's a message board that used to be, before social media and Facebook and all that, message boards were a big deal. And some of them are still around. And UMA is one of them that's still around. That's interesting that he calls it simply a monster action figure. It doesn't say Shock Monster. And he sees the Shock Monster as a kind of a rebel, like the Fonz, like a 50s delinquent. And I can understand that from the era that the character came from. That's certainly one way. Oh, there, it does say Shock Monster. There you go. But the title of this, there wasn't a series, there was just this one. But the overarching title is Monster action figure. So it's got a dungeon, a lot of red, just like in the Trick or Treat one, but it's more of a punk delinquent Marlon Brando or the Fonz or something, 1950s teenage kid, like I was a teenage Frankenstein, I was a teenage werewolf, I was a teenage Shock Monster. This one does have a card, but it's out of its card. This is another independently made custom shock. It's got blue hair. I don't know if Trick or Treat Studios might go for a blue-haired variant of that figure one of these days. Who knows? He's got glow-in-the-dark hands. Shoes. These both have shoes. And jeans. And I think this was more of... It almost looks like a... Like the Lizard or that kind of... You know, like Kurt Connors turning into a lizard with that... With the kind of clothes he's got on, you could almost imagine Kurt Connors turning green. He's about to sprout his tail. This is a more Mego-esque take. If Mego had made a shock back in the day, it might have looked like this. That's another interpretation in 8 inches of the shock monster. What is the... Let's just show you the... That's the packaging that it came in. And it's going for a Tomlin style Monsters of Legend. This is Castaway Toys. And they, I don't know if they're still functioning or not, but they were an independent company. This is a little 3 3/4 inch shock that Castaway Toys made. Again, it's that 50s thing. So everyone's associating the shock with this 50s style. That looks very 50s. And you know, I was joking about my shock working in a diner, but this actually does have this sort of a 50s diner vibe. The colors and the general design of it. So that's a 3 3/4 inch shock. And I would imagine now it'd be less likely that you would see things like this, since the ownership of Topstone was always in limbo. No one really knew who owned it. And now Trick or Treat, now a major company, has asserted that, in fact, they own it. They paid money for it. They own it. That was not the case before, when it was... No one really knew technically who owned it or who would actually take action if you did anything with Topstone. But it's still not exactly perfect. The ownership is, there's still some elements that are kind of meh. And I haven't verified this, but I am making an educated assumption that the reason they don't use the Topstone name on these products has something to do with some encumbrances on that name that makes it sticky to use that name on these products. So maybe at some point those obstacles will be removed and they'll rebrand some of these things as Topstone. I don't know. It's none of my business. I'm curious about it, but I don't need to have the inside scoop on everything. Before we move away from the world of the shock monster entirely, let's look at one more shocking item from Trick or Treat Studios. This is a blow mold plastic shock monster candy bucket from Trick or Treat Studios. This was announced and up for pre-orders in 2023 and shipped in 2024. Let's see this tag here. If I can get it out without messing things up. There's our buddy, the Shock Monster, the Chamber of Horrors Shock Monster. This is a really cool item, and I especially like the fact that it looks like the traditional Keith Ward latex shock monster, the black-haired version. The way it's painted, the color scheme looks very traditional. This looks much more traditional than the mask that Trick or Treat put out. That looks more like an old-fashioned 60s topstone rubber shock monster. Now, it would be cool to see a blue-haired version of this. It would be very cool to see one of these molded in orange plastic. Topstone did release Halloween candy buckets, not of their characters like this, however, but they did produce candy buckets, and they were in orange plastic, mostly with black or green paint on them. So it would be neat to see an orange version molded in orange plastic with minimal paint, just a little bit of a spray, some green, some black, maybe just a little bit, but mostly orange. I don't know if we'll see that or not. I realize there are economic realities with toy companies, the toy industry in general, for a variety of reasons, so we're probably lucky to see anything from anybody, let alone new product lines. But nevertheless, I hope we do see some more Chamber of Horrors products from Trick or Treat Studios, some more masks, some more buckets, some more action figures. It'd be nice. It would be nice. Well, that's Shock. So let's look at Beast of Blood. And the reflections are not quite as bad on him because the card isn't as dark and his costume isn't as dark. So the reflections aren't as bad. And if you're hearing sounds in the background, that's Billy getting into mischief. That is the poster art from the movie Beast of Blood, part of the Hemisphere Pictures Blood Island series. And someday I'll do a video on Blood Island. And I'll show you things that I won't show you in this video. Now that actually looks pretty close to what the character's feet look like, and I don't know about the hands so much, but that's definitely what his feet look like, because there's some famous stills of him, and you can really see the makeup. Now, one thing about the outfit, it's based, I think, more on the poster art than the way the character looks in the movie. In the movie, he's dressed differently. I think he's got jeans or dark pants and a shirt that's more of a typical button-down shirt, and it's all covered with blood and grime. When this is definitely grimy. I'm glad they did that. I'm glad they put grime on him. I would have liked a splash of blood, kind of like a Azrak Henway mummy. I would have liked some blood on him because the character definitely has blood all over him, and he has blood on his skin too. He's bleeding all over. He has green blood and red blood, and that's all kind of mixed together on him. I don't know if his torso is all sculpted all over, if the whole figure is sculpted, or if some of that is, if there's a generic body underneath there, and the it's like a breastplate that's attached to it. Since I'm not going to take him off the card, I'm not going to find out. He has an axe. I think he does use an axe. He might have a machete at some point. He's in two movies, but this look is based on the Beast of Blood look. His appearance changes. His debut is in a movie called Mad Doctor of Blood Island. And the character's name is Don Ramon, and he has leukemia. There's a mad doctor on Blood Island, Dr. Lorca, who offers Don Ramon the chance to be cured if he allows Dr. Lorca to do experimental medical tests on him. And Dr. Lorca, I guess he injects him with this chlorophyll concoction made from radioactive plants, because in Brides of Blood, it's established that the island was exposed to radiation and the plants are carnivorous and they move and do crazy things. So Dr. Lorca took some kind of extract from those plants and tried to see what the medical benefits or effects would be exposing people to that chlorophyll. And it turns Don Ramon into this zombie-like monster. He's kind of like the Incredible Melting Man, only much earlier. He turns greenish, or his blood turns green. He's got some red blood, some green blood, and his skin starts just melting, but he also kind of mutates, and he gets fangs and claws, and he turns into this crazy monster, this mutant, this mutated creature. And in Beast of Blood, he loses his head, which is why the poster art shows him pulling his head off. Now, he never does that in the movie, but he does lose his head, and he's still alive. The head's alive, the body's alive. And the head, at one point, controls the body, kind of like in Reanimator. I don't think the head comes off of this, based on other things that I've read and seen online. I don't think the head is detachable. That would have been a good feature. You can tell on this mask they were thinking about that, because the edge is jagged. So it's like his head were pulled off or ripped off. They could have just made a clean cut, but they made it jagged like that to suggest a severed head, or a head that was pulled off. This artwork on this card is much more basic. It really seems like it's just going for the look of the poster. And the poster just has a white background. This is an off-white. And that's a pretty good depiction of what the Beast of Blood would be doing. He'd be in the jungle, swinging that axe. Now, I haven't really talked much about the origin of these films, so if you're not familiar with them, you might be bewildered what this is all about. The Blood Island series was financed by Hemisphere Pictures out of New York and produced by Jerry De Leon and directed by Eddie Romero in the Philippines. The films had a mostly Filipino cast, but the star was American actor John Ashley. So, really, they're movies from the Philippines, but the financing comes from the U.S. And the major distribution was in the U.S. to the drive-in circuit, mostly. And I really like the Blood Island series. It's a very pulpy, lurid. It's almost like the old men's magazines from the 60s that were very lurid and very sexual and very campy and very violent. It's like those magazines put on the screen. And there's nothing else quite like the Blood Island series. There's only two with Don Ramon in it, the chlorophyll monster. There's Terror is a Man, Brides of Blood, Mad Doctor of Blood Island, Beast of Blood. Those are the official ones. There's some movies that kind of are in the orbit that are adjacent to the Blood Island series, but not officially part of it. Like The Blood Drinkers and Brain of Blood, a couple others that are not technically officially part of the series, but they're sort of adjacent to the series. They're part of the universe of Blood Island. There haven't been a lot of chlorophyll monster toys. Here is a Distinctive Dummies custom toy. That was a toy made in a limited run by an independent company called Distinctive Dummies. And I've talked about them before. Someday I'll do an episode about their Hammer figures. Maybe this season we'll have a Distinctive Dummies Hammer episode. It'll be Hammer time. They're doing, in this illustration, they're doing a head transplant. They're trying to put Don Ramon's head on a healthy body. It doesn't work. This probably looks more like the actual character. Well, I don't know. I don't know about the face, but the clothing, definitely that clothing is more like what he wears in the movie, for sure. Let me get a closer look at this face. I like both these versions. You know, they're both pretty accurate, just they're different, but I can't really say that one is more accurate than the other. I think the trick-or-treat one, the face at least, is technically more accurate. Yeah. The Distinctive Dummies one, it accentuates some features that the trick-or-treat one doesn't. But I think all total, this is the trick-or-treat one is the more authentic sculpture. It more accurately captures the character. But I do like the sort of bloody, raggedy look of this one, Distinctive Dummies, which that aspect is true to the character. And it's the trick-or-treat one is a little too clean. I like that this one is a little messed up. It's kind of messy, and definitely this is a messy character. He's like the melting man, and the makeup is very cheesy and cheap, and the character just looks like he's falling apart. And this toy captures that element of it. It's hard to imagine how he's even alive, like kind of like the melting man, and he's not just falling apart. Here is another independent toy based on the same character. This is obviously trying to emulate the poster art. Very famous poster art. A lot of people, they haven't seen the movie, but they've seen this poster. Is it in focus? This is based on the 60s Marx Universal Monsters figures. It's imagining, it's like a what-if figure. What if Marx had made a Beast of Blood? And recently there was a licensed figure like this, which I have, but I'll save that for another day. There have been a lot of, after decades of no licensed merchandise for that character, in recent years there's been a lot. Now there is one official toy from the era when these movies were brand new, which I have, which I'll talk about in another show. One day I'll do an episode all about Blood Island, and I'll show you some of that stuff. But there was an official toy that came out in conjunction with Mad Doctor of Blood Island. A toy of this character, which you'll see in the future. I don't want to turn this into a Blood Island episode, because I want to do a Blood Island episode someday. Okay. Oh, we got a drink. I said, okay. Whenever I say okay, you gotta take a drink. This is another, since it's sitting here, why not look at it? This is another Trick or Treat Studios item. This is a Halloween bucket. They made two Universal Studios Halloween buckets. This creature and a Frankenstein, a Karloff Frankenstein. And then, I was going to say they lost the Universal license. I don't know if lost is the right word, but there was a disagreement between Trick or Treat Studios and Universal, and resulted in Trick or Treat Studios no longer having any Universal licenses, which was too bad. Okay. Oh, you gotta drink. These are two really nice figures, and I'm glad Trick or Treat did these, because no one else was going to do them. I could almost imagine NECA doing Beast of Blood, but maybe it's just too obscure even for them. They've done some obscure things, but they're more, when they go obscure, it's more like 80s slasher horror, not so much the older drive-in stuff. So I don't think NECA would have ever done Beast of Blood. I doubt it very much. But Trick or Treat did, and I would love it if they continued this line with the creature from Terror is a Man, which is basically a cat man. He looks kind of like a mummy. He's all bandaged up, but his head, hands, and feet are exposed, and he's basically a human cat. And he's a really cool looking monster. Brides of Blood, that monster would be harder to capture, but I mean, they could do it, but it would be a little harder in the Mego format to realize that character, because he's kind of a big blobby creature, but it could be done. Now, as far as this guy, the Beast of Blood, he looks very different in Mad Doctor of Blood Island. It's the same character, but his look is completely different. And I actually prefer the Mad Doctor version, even though it's much more crude and fake and silly. I think it's more lurid. The fact that it looks like some elementary school kids slopped it together with paper mache, there's something more disturbing about that more low-tech look, the less refined look. To me, it looks more creepy. The more refined, stylish look of Beast of Blood, where they really they up the ante with the makeup, it looks cool, but not as creepy. That looks very cool. That's a neat character. It's a neat monster. In Mad Doctor of Blood Island, he's just a gloppy mess, but I find it more disturbing. Much like the Incredible Melting Man, this character that's just dissolving and falling apart, and yet he's still, in a supernatural way, so deadly. Whenever he encounters people in Mad Doctor, he just hacks them to pieces and pulls their entrails out and throws their limbs around. He doesn't do that in Beast of Blood, because he doesn't have as much screen time in Beast of Blood. You only really see him at the beginning and the end, and he's out of the action for most of the film, and he doesn't get to go crazy like he does in Mad Doctor and just wreak havoc like he does in his first film appearance. So I doubt very much Trick or Treat would do this, but if they were going to make a whole series of these, I would love to have another version of Don Ramon looking more like he did in Mad Doctor of Blood Island. And then they could branch out and they could do the Blood Drinkers, very suave, bald vampire in that movie who looked great as an action figure. And I don't know. I mean, Brain of Blood was supposed to be a part of the series, but it was shot by Al Adamson in the United States. But it was intended to be marketed as part of the Blood Island series. So they could do that creature from that movie, which kind of resembles the closet monster in The Brain That Wouldn't Die. It's sort of that genre of creature design. And he'd make a good action figure. There's some other films that I don't know if they're owned by the same company, though. Right now, one company is controlling the rights to all these Blood Island movies. Let me see what the copyright information is here. Beast of Blood, copyright 1970, Independent International Pictures. Now, Independent International was run by the late Sam Sherman, who just passed away a few weeks ago. And Sam was a favorite among many fans because he was very accessible, did a lot of interviews. He was someone that the fans could get to know. He seemed like he was there for the fans, and a lot of people were very sad when he died, and that was too bad. I mean, he lived to a good age. I don't know exactly how old he was, but he lived to a ripe old age. But it was nice that we had him around as long as we did. And Independent International was his company. He worked for Hemisphere Pictures earlier when these films were produced. But Sam did not produce these films. He acquired them later when he broke away from Hemisphere and he formed his own company. Eventually, and how this happened, I don't know, but he acquired ownership of all those Blood Island movies. And he handled the home video distribution and merchandising and so on. Well, I don't know. I guess that's a lot to say about Blood Island for a video that's not really a Blood Island video. I'm just taking another look at this character. I like the emaciated look. I like the slouchy shoulders and that he doesn't look too action-packed. He doesn't look like he's a supervillain about to beat up Spider-Man. He looks undead. I like that. He's very zombie-like. And it's definitely an accurate sculpt. Could you do a slightly different interpretation that would look a little different and still be accurate? Yes. It's coming at the figure from a certain direction creatively. And it's not the only direction, but it is a good one and it's an accurate one. And I'm glad it doesn't look like that, which is a little too Big Jim for me. More so the Shock, the prototype for the Shock Monster, but this looks a little too Big Jim. Whereas this looks like an undead thing, which is what he should look like. And I'm glad that they messed up his clothing a little, made it kind of grimy. I do wish he had some blood splatters. I think that would be a finishing touch if he just flicked a little red paint on that figure, and like an Azrak Henry mummy or a Lincoln mummy, and just had some blood splatter, and maybe everyone, because it was actually splattered, everyone would look a little different. That would be cool. And maybe put a little, and I would say the same about the mask, put a little green and red blood here and there trickling down. That would complete him. Some green and red blood splatters on the clothes and some trickling blood here and there on the figure, because he is a bloody character in both films. He's very bloody. He's bleeding all over. He's melting, basically, and he's just bleeding all over. And his clothes are soaked both with his blood and the blood of his victims. So he's bleeds green blood, but when you see him in close-up, he's got red and green. But he's got different varieties of blood coming out of him. With shock, let's look at him again. Does he have an undershirt? I think he does, like a little sweater. Yeah, he has like a little sweater in there, like an Azrak Hamway Frankenstein. I can see it better on camera. Yeah, there it is. He's pretty cool. Very similar characters. I'd never really thought of how similar these two characters were until Trick or Treat Studios chose this pair to put out. But they are very similar. And they could have added the Incredible Melting Man to this, made it a trio, and all three would have been kind of a trilogy of similar characters with the same idea of this undead character that's either falling apart or dissolving or rotting. These zombie-like characters they're zombies, but not exactly zombies. They're like living zombies. They're not exactly undead. They're alive, but their body's falling apart as if they were dead. What is the Shock Monster? Is he a zombie? The mask was sometimes marketed as horror zombie. So is he a zombie? Is he kind of a Frankenstein-like thing? What is he? That's up to your imagination. That's the cool thing about the Topstone characters. They're open for your imagination. They're not licensed movie characters. They're original characters that Keith Ward came up with. And you can take that face, that mask, and just let your imagination run and make up a backstory. What is this creature? How did it originate? How does it live? What's going on? What does it want? How did it come to be? I think that's all we have to say about these figures. They're a great debut for Trick or Treat Studios, getting into the action figure, getting into the Mego style action figure market. They've already been in the all plastic, smaller action figure market for quite some time, but this is their first foray into the larger, they've done 12 inch figures. I've got like the 12 inch Michael Myers. I've got that. So they've done 12 inch with clothes, and they've done smaller, all plastic kind of 80s style figures. But this is their first foray into the 8-inch Mego style. They could have certainly picked more mainstream characters, for sure. I really respect them for going this route. They chose a couple of very obscure cult characters. I understand they've got this IP, Topstone Chamber of Horrors, and they want to use that, so that made sense. But to go Blood Island on us, to finally have a mass-produced, mainstream Blood Island action figure, factory-made, licensed, everything. That's important. This is quite a milestone in toy history. This is very important. Like I said, there was an official toy once upon a time, which we'll talk about on another show. But this is the first time there's been a articulated kind of a figure based on this character that wasn't custom, wasn't independent, that was a factory-made, mass-produced, real action figure that could be sold in regular stores. I hope we see more Blood Island toys. I kind of doubt that we will. It's unbelievable that we got this figure. So we should just be thankful we got that. If they made more, I mean, I would love to see it. I don't know if the market is there to support it or not. I guess it depends if these sell. If they sell a lot more of these Beast of Blood figures than they anticipated, maybe they'll say, hey, there's gold in those hills. Let's mine it and put out some more Blood Island characters. That'd be nice. A Dr. Lorca would be nice. I'd want him from Beast of Blood, where he has an eye patch and scars. I think that would be the better version of Dr. Lorca. there's a lot of characters. You could have a whole array of Blood Island characters, a lot of marketable characters, mostly monsters and even a couple of humans, that would just really lend themselves to action figures. But this one's got to sell. It seems like a tall order to sell enough of these to warrant a series, but it could happen. It could happen. And I think, well, I know because Justin has said so online, they're also waiting to see how well this sells to determine whether or not they're going to do more Topstone characters as action figures. I think it'd be great to see. It'd be great to see like a ghoul and a vampire girl and a caveman and a devil or a graveyard devil, all those wonderful Topstone characters represented in 8 inches like this. They'd be wonderful, but this one's got to sell. And they could all come in these coffin-shaped bubbles. I love that. So instead of hoping for some amazing stretch goal, I'm just glad we got these. And if this is all we get, fine, at least we got these. But more would be nice. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But we've got these two very unique figures that I know I've wanted to see a good Beast of Blood figure for a very long time. And I've wanted to see Topstone figures for a long time as well. Okay, take a drink. I think that's it. Thank you for watching. I hope you continue to have a good Halloween season. I will probably be back one more time for a Halloween episode. It'll either upload on Halloween Day or the day after on Saturday. Depends if I can get it done in time for the day of Halloween. But my plan is to have one more episode, and then we'll take a little break until Thanksgiving, and then we'll come back for the holiday season with more episodes. Until then, the one who dies with the most toys is dead.